The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Hello everyone, we've got something very special for you on the podcast here today. As you might have heard us relentlessly plugging over the past couple of weeks, Last Orders had its very first live show last weekend, held at the Battle of Ideas Festival in London. Thank you so much to everyone who came along. It was great to see you there. I'm glad to say it was standing room only. And huge thanks as well to our very special guests, Madeline Grant and Patrick Christie's, who are typically brilliant. We got into all kinds of different topics, the Tories' dreadful legacy on the nanny state, the farcical COVID inquiry, the debanking scandal, Boris Johnson's new GB News show, and many other topics as well. You might hear on the recording strange kind of whirring noise in the background. That's because our show was rudely interrupted in a couple of instances by helicopters flying overhead on account of the pro-Hamas demonstrations that were going on across the road there in Westminster. But other than that, I thought it was a brilliant discussion. I hope you do too. So let's get on with the show.
Hello, London!
Hey!
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to this first ever live edition of the Last Orders podcast. My name's Tom Slater. I'm the editor of Spiked. I'm also the co-host of this show, All About Freedom and the Nanny State. Alongside me, the man who's on every single episode of Last Orders, my co-host, Chris Snowden from the Institute of Economic Affairs. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm very well. Never been better, actually.
Lovely to see so many listeners. Lovely to know we've got some listeners. I'm assuming. So, how many people are listeners to the podcast? About half. Yeah.
That's good. That's pretty good. Other people are curious, but that's fine too. We're also delighted to be joined by two fantastic returning guests. On my far right down there is Madeline Grant, columnist and parliamentary sketchwriter at Telegraph. How are you doing, Madeline?
Yeah, good. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. And we're also delighted to be joined by GB News' Patrick Christie's. How are you doing, Patrick?
Good. It's the furthest left I've ever been.
Hey.
I'm sure you will demonstrate otherwise during this session. But it's big news over at GB News. You've got a new colleague in the form of one Alexander Defeffel Boris Johnson.
Absolutely. Yes, we do. I had the dubious honour of announcing that at 3 p.m. yesterday. So, we managed to keep that quiet on account of the fact that none of us knew, including myself, until moments before. So, good though. I think it'd be. Everyone else would have had him, regardless of your views on him. Everyone else would have had Boris. So he might as well have come to us, I think.
No, what's he going to be doing? Has he got his own show, or is he just going to be a talking head now?
Well, I hope he's not doing 3 till 6 Mondays to Friday. I think he's a
game show. Yeah, sort of like The Chase, but on PC version.
So, he's going to be doing a lot of election coverage, which will be good. He's going to do a lot on global Britain. I think he's got a 6-part series and maybe some live audience shows as well. So, I think like with anything with Boris, though, it will get as much as he's willing to give. You know, so
I think
so we'll see, won't we?
And Madeline, I hear you've been writing about the great James O'Brien recently.
Friend of the show.
Yeah.
His latest. He couldn't make it today, but what's his latest book? Is that right?
In more proof that I deserve a raise, I was asked to cover James O'Brien's book, How They Broke Britain, which is a 384 pages long expose of the kind of the big culprits behind Brexit, the surge of populism that he hates. And my God, I feel traumatised, frankly. This is like a big therapy session for me, frankly, to be surrounded by all of you people, because I'm still recovering. It was that bad.
Did you make some good points? Did you mention Tufton Street or something?
Oh my God, yeah. It basically reads like if you talk to a madman at a bus stop. Or like some guy who's done a few too many spidery diagrams of how everything is connected. He'll jump from like Russia to Dominic Cummings, like Tufton Street, and it's all like, whoa. In the end, you know, the big conclusion is that James O'Brien is a very angry man. That's the big takeaway.
And Chris Stone, you feature in this, I hear. Is that true, madam? Does his name appear?
Well, probably barely anyone at this festival that is not mentioned in the book. I'm quite offended that I wasn't personally mentioned. I mean, everyone at the think tank world is mentioned. I'm sure that Spiked gets a mention. I mean, as I say, it was 384 pages, so I'm trying to forget it, but I'm pretty sure that there is definitely a Claire Fox mention. Probably you as well, if you're lucky. It's badge of honour.
I feel very left out.
Yeah.
We've all done our bit in breaking Britain, haven't we?
We have done. Especially you and all the people you know who all live together at 55 Tufton Street. Yeah. In those bunk beds. It's a hell of a sight if you see it.
Yeah. But, they're actually all the same person. They've been cloned.
Slightly different suit, but it's the same thing. Yeah. We're going to talk about a bunch of different things today. We're also halfway through the session going to go out for your questions. Could be about what we're talking about.
Postbag live.
A live edition of our postbag section. Which
I did the jingle live as well.
He'll do it live. He's got his instruments on the table. But to kick off, I thought we'd talk a bit about just looking at how the Tories have done on the questions of the nanny state, given the fact that we've all been absorbing this crazy policy of Rishi Sunak to effectively usher in smoking prohibition. Mm. So for a podcast that cares about the nanny state, it's about as bad as it could possibly get. But Chris, I guess the question I want to get into is, has the Tory party become the party of the nanny state? If we think about the last 10 years, if we think about the various different iterations of this Tory party, it's still been pretty solidly kind of anti-freedom, George Osborne, sugar tax, all kinds of other things. You know, how would you kind of mark the Conservatives? Now it looks like almost certain that their rule is coming to an end on the issues that you care about. Has it been as dreadful as I'm suggesting it?
Yeah, way worse than I expected. I mean, you don't know what Labour would have done in their shoes, right? I mean, the Tories have been in power since 2010, and the world has got more paternalistic in that time. And there's nothing the Tories have done that Labour have opposed, right? And this tobacco prohibition is a policy that Wes Streeton came up with. And supposedly Sunak adopted it because it polled quite well and it sort of shot Labour's fox. They keep doing Labour things to shoot Labour's fox. But it's not really doing everything that your opponents want is not really shooting their fox. It's sort of starving your fox to death by shooting all your chickens. Do you know what I mean? if that works as a metaphor.
I see you've been working on this. Might need a bit of work, but yes.
You just end up, you might as well just have the Labour Party in government. I don't really understand Conservative MPs. If you're going to get into politics, then you join the Labour Party or the Green Party and Lib Dems. Most people are going to say either, you know, sort of good on you, or even your opponents are going to think that you are sort of well-meaning but naive, generally speaking, right? You're not going to get much hate for it. If you join the Conservative Party, you know you're going to get hated. People are going to think you're scum, that you're evil. And so I would assume anybody who goes down that path has got to be really committed to some sort of ideology, some sort of, you know, basically pro-freedom type, you know, anti-socialist principles. And yet, what do they actually do in government? And I just can't, when they get kicked out next year, assuming they do get kicked out next year, there's surely going to be a lot of Tory MPs and ministers thinking, we sort of blew that, didn't we? 14 years. There's all these things I wanted to do, all these reasons I became a Conservative and then went through the horrendous process of losing various seats before I finally got a safe one. And what did we actually do? We banned plastic straws and we put like 5p tax on carrier bags and we're banning smoking somehow and we did a sugar tax and all this kind of stuff. And then we'll look back and go, we were in charge that entire time.
It's both illiberal and pathetic.
Yeah, right. It's more pathetic than it even is liberal. So
they want to ban you from smoking and they want to ban you from using plastic straws, but anything else they've got to point to. Madeline, do you think we've fully kind of digested what a big change something like the smoking ban is, so people haven't seen it or a bit bamboozled by the details, this kind of escalator towards prohibition where the smoking age will get higher by 1 year every year until you have 65-year-olds asking 66-year-olds to buy them a pack of cigarettes. Have we digested what a big, outrageous prohibitionist policy this is?
I mean, it's completely, completely insane. It's the kind of thing where it's also, I think, speaks to like a fundamental impotence of the government and of our politicians, because there are massive problems facing the country. We have a health system that doesn't work. We don't really have a social care set up, certainly not one that is sustainable. We've got to figure out like military spending in a turbulent world. All of this stuff is just too difficult. So they go after Elf Bars, because it's like that's the lowest hanging fruit. It's displacement activity. And, you know, the thing that is quite worrying is, you know, Chris was saying about the foxes and the chickens. It's when you've done that, it becomes a race to the bottom of ever more illiberal, ever more nanny state policy. So the week after Rishi Sunak unveiled the absolute wacko policy, I mean, I would love to have some of what they were smoking when they came up with that. And the week after that, Wes Streeting had his speech at the Labour conference, in which he said, firstly, that was our idea and you nicked it, like, no, 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 no. And then second, and then after that, he said, oh, and by the way, we're going after the vaping companies now. He's like, we're going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. Yeah, you guys, the people who've single-handedly got more young people away from cigarettes than any number of government interventions, like, how dare you bastards? but that was kind of his second point. So I think it's even more dangerous than shooting the fox. It leads to a kind of race to the bottom because no one is differentiating themselves. So it becomes like, how can you differentiate yourself with ever more pettifogging nanny state nonsense?
What do you think, Patrick?
I think there are things that are already banned that they are rubbish at actually stopping. I mean, last time I checked, jihad was banned. And yeah, we've got people out there on the streets.
No, but it has many meanings.
It's got many meanings. And
Self-improvement.
But, you know, knife crime's banned, and yet we've got an unrelenting stabathon out there. Shoplifting is banned, and yet we've got more shoplifters going around than we've ever had before. So there are things in this country that are already outlawed that they are rubbish at keeping control of. And so now adding more things to that. You mentioned the example there of smoking. I mean, that is, I think, just the most obvious example of a government thinking that individuals cannot be trusted to run their own lives. Everybody knows that smoking is bad for you. They've taken all of the branding off of smoking packets. It's just a picture of like a charred lung or someone with a rocky moustache and a massive tumour. We know that it's terrible for you, right? We know it's awful. But you should make your own decisions on things like that. It's not for the government to come in and say, you're not allowed to do these things. And when I look at it and I think, well, this all centres around a fundamental inability to think that people can choose to make their own decisions and live their own lives and have personal freedoms. But it also centres around the idea that the state and the people in charge of the state know better and can run your life better. And they can't even run their own lives, a lot of these people. Mm-hmm. They cannot run their own lives. If you look at, you know, some of their own families, for example, if you look at some of the decisions that they make in their own workplace, they can't even run their own departments. They can't get civil servants to do what they want. They can't look at a massive public vote, whether or not that's with Brexit or whether or not that's with the last general election, where time and time again, people have voted for things like we want, you know, better border control or we want a variety of different things. And they've not been able to enforce that. So why now should they reach into any of our lives and say to us, you are not allowed to do this thing that you enjoy. You are not allowed to drive 1 mile an hour over 20 miles an hour. You're not allowed to do all of this stuff. You need to get this type of boiler. Just piss off.
Last orders ran for the ages. What's next down the slippery slope, do you think, Chris?
Because vapes, obviously. We're apparently calling Wes Streeting, who is setting government policy. And that's another thing the government can't enforce, is not selling vapes to kids. Yeah. And indeed, like banning, you know, illegal vapes from being sold. After that, gambling, booze, food, obviously.
Just banning food.
Banning food, yeah. Probably. Or not straight away, you just gradually increase the age at which people can buy food. It's a no agreement.
But, Madeleine, when people look at this kind of period of the Tory party, what do you think it's going to be remembered for? Is it just going to be a kind of collective shrug when people think about what this, from a conservative perspective, I guess, yeah, when it was, again, out of power for so many years, they've been in power for so many years, even if it is under several different leaders. How do you think we're going to look back on this particular period, I guess?
I think a massive missed opportunity, like an extraordinary opportunity to change how things were done in this country after, you know, millions upon millions of people voted in such a way that said, we're ready for change, we're ripe for change, we want to be listened to, we're fed up with having our desires for greater democracy or for better border control, immigration, etc., being ignored by successive administrations. And then they give a very clear signal that they want to be listened to, and they do precisely nothing to address that. I think it's a, you know, tragedy, a missed opportunity. I think it's going to be... I'll be interested to see what it's like for Boris Johnson when he's at GB News, because I think there's probably a lot of listeners of GB News who blame Boris for this and think that he had a great opportunity and screwed it up.
Boris Johnson famously someone who was briefly a libertarian at one point, but then suddenly wants to clamp down on puddings and all sorts of things.
You can talk
about projecting your own problems onto them.
Because I mean,
he hasn't lost any weight, Boris Johnson.
Even with all those injections, he hasn't really done that.
Injections? Didn't
he write about that in one of his Daily Mail columns, which everyone assumed would be about politics? But
I don't know, because it's behind a paywall. Why is he on Mail Online, or what is it called? Mail Plus?
Yeah.
Well, no one can read that.
There's ways around it. But... Patrick, are we at the risk of, if we're talking about some of these lifestyle issues or even some of the kind of censorship issues that we'll often talk about as fights, are we at risk of doing down just how much worse Labour could be? I mean, it's dreadful to get into a kind of, you've got to pick between the lesser of two twats, as it were, in this situation. But are we at risk of undervaluing just how much worse the Labour Party could be? Because they really are up to their necks in all of this kind of prohibitionist...
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, 100%. Okay, so look, the Tories have been... Well, I don't really think they are really the Tories anymore. I think that's quite well established. There's a Rizla paper between the fact that the Labour Party is now pretending to be more right-wing than it is, and the Conservative Party is bizarrely, despite the fact that it's staring down the barrel of a monumental kicking at the next election, and has been for some time, is trying to drag itself towards the centre more. I think that the Labour Party, we cannot underestimate how in the pocket of unions they are. The internal divisions that they've tried to put sticking plasters over. I was at the Labour Party conference, and the massacre of Israelis had happened a couple of days before that. And all of that conference, you could tell, everyone was treading on eggshells. Like, look, let's just get through this, these 3 days here in Liverpool, and let's make sure that at no point someone stands on stage and says something really nice about Jeremy Corbyn. And they got through that, right? But then what happened afterwards? Now they've got hundreds of councillors looking to resign. We've got a new party that is just a specifically pro-Islam party that's popping up now, which will no doubt try to hoover up votes, you know, around the major cities in this country, where they feel they can no longer vote for Labour because their primary focus is about what's going on in Palestine. That the Labour Party now is massively divided on this issue. All of those historic divisions that the Labour Party has been ravaged by still exist. So you're going to end up with that. And the idea of control always exists as well when it comes to the Labour Party. They are continually going to be the party that wants to reach into your life and try to tell you how to run it, but also tell you that you have a duty to try to run everybody else's life as well. So if you are, you know, doing quite well for yourself, they're going to want to try and reach into your bank account and make sure that you pay for everybody else on top of that. It is not, for me, a credible solution that the Labour Party will be any better. I think they are lying to you at the moment to try to get into power. And when people see Keir Starmer on stage and hear him talk, you have to remember that this guy would have been happy to have had Jeremy Corbyn win the last two general elections. He would have been happy about that. This guy is not a deeply principled chap. He's not. He's just saying what he thinks it takes to get elected. And then the reality after that, I think, will be quite dangerous.
And another thing that this Tory party may well be remembered for, Chris, is lockdown, is this handling of the pandemic. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the COVID inquiry, which has been, to say it descended into farce would suggest it was okay to begin with, but it's been pretty horrendous. I mean, it started off with actually the kind of lead counsel for the inquiry talking about how they're going to interrogate everything from the pandemic response to systemic racism. He was blaming Brexit on day one, you know. For
DCP, these. Obviously.
Exactly. It's obviously Marc Francois' fault. But also, as the days have gone on, there seems to have been a lot of quite explicit rewriting of history as to what happened. I know you've written about this in the past week. Do you want to tell us a bit more about what's been going on there?
Has anyone been watching any of the COVID inquiry? No? I'm morbidly fascinated by it now. I've only seen 2 days of it. I watched a bit a while ago when Duncan Selby was on. Duncan Selby was the head of Public Health England. And that thing got closed down, like, because they were so pathetically incompetent. He's now in Saudi Arabia. He's growing this big moustache. He's working for the Saudi Arabian government doing public health for them. And he had this huge moustache, like he's literally on the run doing like some sort of pound shop Don Revy or something. You know, it's not a reference, everyone will guess, but fleeing to Saudi Arabia. And he was obviously covering his own arse. And then I watched John Edmonds. Now, John Edmonds is one of the epidemiologists who was on TV a lot, and he was doing a lot of modelling. And he's the one who sort of sounds like Simon Pegg. Do you know what I mean? He still looks a bit like Simon Pegg too. Yeah. Simon Pegg had like a slow puncture. And he aged very quickly during the course of the pandemic, even more quickly than the rest of us. But you may or may not remember him being on Channel 4 News early in the pandemic, about the middle of March. So we locked down, as you recall, 23rd of March, I think. He was on 10 days earlier, saying explicitly that the only way to end this is herd immunity. There's no need to panic. We certainly won't be doing a lockdown. And he was up against his Silicon Valley entrepreneur in California who was going, I've been looking at the figures. I've been doing my back of the envelope calculations. I've looked at what's happened in Italy. Everyone's going to be completely overwhelmed in 2 weeks. We need to do something now. And he was going, No, you don't understand the data. He then, of course, Edmonds then went on and the rest of the pandemic, it was like, we need to lock down now. We wanted to lock down in September. He wanted to lock down constantly. He wants to lock down for Omicron pretty much. So he's now, he was giving evidence for hours and hours and hours. And the whole thing is appalling. I mean, they've got these two KCs, because the whole thing, I didn't realize it was literally like a court case, right? It's not just like a select committee. It's a judge, a proper judge. And two proper lawyers, two KCs who employed God knows how much expense for up to 7 years to do this. And he's asking these unbelievably softball questions to Edmonds, right? The obvious question to ask him is, why did you totally change your mind, right? Regardless of whether you think he was right then or wrong then, whatever, why did you change your mind? If you know, you're meant to be an expert in this area. Never asked that at all. Completely skirted over the initial lockdown, just focused on how much he wanted to lock down in September, which the whole inquiry seemed to think was self-evident that we should have locked down harder and faster, and was just such a toady to Edmonds. Well,
didn't he commend him for his bravery at one point?
Yeah, he said at some point Edmonds was going like, it wasn't really my responsibility to tell the government what to do, but I can't help feeling partly responsible. And he goes, well, if I may say so, Professor, that is tremendously to your credit. And that was how it was for over 3 hours. Then they brought in Carl Hennigan, right, who I'm not a great fan of either particularly. But he had a very different take in sort of August, September of 2020. He was saying we should have focused protection and let's try and cocoon the elderly and stuff like that, which we now know really wouldn't work because it turns out you can get reinfected quite a lot. But it wasn't a totally insane thing to say. In fact, it was the government's position at one point. David Halpin from the Nudge Unit went on TV going, like, we want to cocoon the elderly. And then you never heard from him again. He was obviously told never to speak to the media for the rest of the pandemic. Right? But, okay, whatever you think of Hennigan, you know, he had a counterpoint. The reason the establishment hates him still, is that he had this infamous meeting with Boris Johnson, which turned out just to be a Zoom call, and Boris Johnson wasn't impressed by his arguments and didn't change his mind. And we did indeed go into lockdown another two times. And they only give him an hour to explain himself. They spent about 20 minutes questioning his credentials because he's a sort of professor of evidence-based policy at Oxford University, but he's not a specialist in virology like people like Edmonds are. And then asking about the Great Barrington Declaration, which he didn't even sign. And then they pointed out that some WhatsApp group that John Edmonds in, somebody had called him a fuckwit. And this was brought up during Edmonds' evidence, at which point, you know, Edmonds said, yes, we were probably talking about Carl Hennigan. And then it brought it up to Carl Hennigan, which is just rude, really. You know what I mean? It's quite funny, but it is rude. And so that's, like I say, I've only seen a couple of days of it, but if the rest of it is anything like that, the whole thing is a kangaroo course. It's a ridiculous waste of money. No, like with all these inquiries, no one's going to be happy with the outcome. The people who disagree with us say it's a whitewash anyway. Stop having inquiries. Yeah. They never get you anywhere, do they?
Yeah. You know, in Sweden, they had one which was, it didn't take the form of a grand public inquiry. It was presided over, it was a kind of commission that was presided over by a neutral figure who didn't have, a statutory duty to interview tons of witnesses and involve all these key stakeholders. And they reported the findings of their report came out before we had even established what the terms of reference were for our big public inquiry. And I think it was like, you know, it was a fairly smallish document, the kind that somebody might actually be able to read and make sense of. And, you know, I think Chris made some really good points there about the very emotionally charged way in which it began. You know, the COVID bereaved families are put at the heart of it. And obviously, you know, not for a second trying to deny the horrible trauma that many people live through. But if you begin on that emotive note, is it going to be the dispassionate analysis that we're going to likely to learn something from about, you know, the future? Another bit of testimony that I found really extraordinary last couple of weeks was they were interviewing a guy called Mark Woolhouse, I think is his name. And he was One of Nicola Sturgeon's advisors, and he was on the modelling team in Scotland, and he actually had like not a bad pandemic. It was him who said to Sturgeon, "It's not true that COVID is just being reseeded from the Typhoid Marys of England. That's actually Anglophobic and not true." And the idea that you could ever get eradication, like he was quite good at pushing back on some of this stuff. But he said something really extraordinary, which was that they had never even asked them to model the kind of harm that lockdown would cause. They were simply modelling disease and outbreak. And they weren't considering also to contemplate other ways of mitigating health risks that were not lockdown. And I think that's really unforgivable, because I think we have some sympathy, actually, I certainly do, for politicians in these really extraordinary times trying to make decisions quickly with imperfect information. What I cannot forgive is the fact that they never even try to avoid something that has had so many catastrophic effects. You can't just say hindsight is 2020. That's like, no, we're completely blind in this very important. We have a serious myopia at the heart of everything that we're doing. And on the lawyer's point, Lord Falconer, Tony Blair's Attorney General, kind of said the quiet bit out loud during the pandemic. He said it had been a boon to lawyers. And I think that's exactly right.
Can I just quickly make a point on this, which is, I think it's important for me anyway not to forget that this whole thing was based on complete and utter bollocks. You know, for quite a while we were told that this was something that had either leaked from a bat or a pangolin at a wet market in China that just happened to be nearby to an institute of virology where they were doing research on this kind of stuff. And then when all of this kind of came out, we had a guy who was known for doing over-exaggerated modelling, who was caught bonking a married woman during the lockdown that he helped to impose. Then we had people like Philip Schofield on national television selling cuddle curtains. Of course, he is known to hug things inappropriately from time to time. And that all just carried on. That was fine. And we had Matt Hancock, who was telling us again, we really need to watch out for this the whole time. There's a theme here, isn't there? The whole time he was cuddling someone he shouldn't have been for quite a long time as well. They didn't seem to care too much about all of these rules. We were told there was a Nepalese variant just in time for Christmas. It turned out that was the first Nepal had ever heard of the whole thing. And then it became Omicron, which people pronounced Omicron. Why? Because they never asked a Greek person how to pronounce a letter of the flipping alphabet. And if they can't even get that right, then how are they supposed to believe anything else that they say? And now here we are having an inquiry into something that everybody else balls up. And to your point as well, Maddy, this idea of, well, I wasn't asked to calculate the impact on wider society and our economy and human existence whilst I was doing my modelling. Why not? I don't mean any offence to anyone in this room, but what kind of like ultra Rain Man-esque autistic degree do you have to not think about maybe the wider impact of this thing? No, you're not a computer, Chris Whitty. And if you are, you're a bad one, you know? I just think the whole thing is an absolute load of rubbish.
And one thing you brought up there, amongst many things, obviously you're opposing it partly on linguistic grounds and all these other things, but one thing that I'm always quite struck by is the fact that regardless of the arguments over lockdown, what sort of measures we should have taken, whatever, the way in which it was done was absolutely terrifying. And I think back to Matt Hancock as well, because for a large part of 2020, certainly 2021, Matt Hancock was effectively ruling by decree in this country. Mm. He was signing laws onto the statute books with no oversight of the
just
public health.
The schools are going to be closed the next 6 months and that's it.
Yeah, just Matt Hancock waves his pen and that's done. And you do think if you've got no trouble with lockdown, just remember that Matt Hancock, this like cross between Napoleon and Alan Partridge, was like the quasi-dictator.
Napoleon.
But do you think that there's not been a kind of reckoning with just what it meant from a kind of civil liberties perspective? Because we argue about infection fatality rates and all these kinds of things and what measures should have been taken. But just the idea that we could flip the whole principle of English liberty on its head.
Oh, well, the thing that really, truly breaks my heart is that I suspect that, you know, obviously we in this room, I would say we care about free speech and free expression, whatever our political views are. We have some kind of concept of freedoms that go beyond the political. I suspect that a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't care. You know, I think there is this rather draconian sort of petty dictator in a lot of British people. It really upset me during lockdown because I actually thought we were different from that, but we really aren't. You know, the police were saying, can you stop ringing the COVID snitch helpline because we're overloaded with callers. I've never been more ashamed to be British when I heard that story. And I suspect that a lot of people genuinely wouldn't think this was a problem. And even now, a lot of people, I think the general consensus view, not only of the COVID inquiry, but also big chunk of the general public, is that lockdown itself wasn't the problem. It was that the politicians were hypocrites, and it was that we didn't lock down quickly enough. you know, even when there's so much evidence coming about the damage, for example, that shutting schools did to kids, long-term damage that particularly the poorer kids is never going to be rectified. It's a tragedy, a human tragedy. People still think that shutting schools was a good idea, according to some recent polling. I mean, it's really depressing. I suspect that we're in a minority of people who even care about the civil liberties.
Have you seen the Partygate documentary? Dramatisation, really, on Channel 4. It was actually quite good. And, I think it was fairly accurate. It was pretty outrageous how much partying was going on, to be fair. But they intersperse it with real people talking about how, they went to their father's funeral and there was only three of them allowed to go and they were being spayed. And they showed some of these horrendous CCTV things from the time, you may remember, where the drones are going over the Pennines, going like, go home, yeah. Go home, all this stuff. And, obviously the contrast between what was going on in Downing Street and what the rules were and what the rest of people were expected to follow is outrageous. But it seems to me the main point is that those laws were wrong to start with. It wasn't that they weren't made any better or worse by Boris Johnson or anybody else in Downing Street breaking. They were just wrong. Yeah. And that surely is the conclusion you've got to draw from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that actually there's nothing wrong with these people were working with each other in Downing Street. It didn't make any difference if they were having a bit of karaoke afterwards. That rule shouldn't be in place. Yeah, I get it. Hypocrisy. I get that they should follow the rules that they created. But I don't think the main message, what to me is the main message, is these rules were wrong and should never have been brought in, regardless of what people in Downing Street were doing. That's not really being hammered home. And it's certainly not going to be hammered home by this bloody inquiry, the whole point of which is to condemn Boris Johnson for not locking down sooner and harder.
The demonisation of people who spoke out about it at the time, woe betide me to try to ever sensationalise anything. But, I mean, I do think that the views of people at the time, which were like, look, is anybody doing a cost-benefit analysis on this in terms of the economy? Well, that doesn't matter. Do you care more about money than lives? Well, it's not as simple as that, is it? Because, as we all know, money does affect people's lives. And then when it goes, what about the kids? Oh, what? So if those kids go home and kill their grandma, you're all right with granny's blooding house? Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying now we're going to have a generation of people massively suffering as a result of this. Anyone who spoke out against it, not just from an overtly umbrella civil liberties term, but from the specific different aspects of it, was called things like a murderer. They were evil. They were dangerous. I know from a broadcast perspective, okay, I will cover a wide range of deeply controversial topics, and I love doing it. The only time I ever get massive shouting in my ear, less so now, but when I was back on radio while this was happening, was someone said something about, like, I don't really want to get a vaccine. You've got to tell them the vaccines are good. You've got to tell them the vaccines are good. Right, okay, well, I think the lockdown thing, you've got to adhere to the law. You've got to, and it's like, why did we get caught up? You don't say that. You don't have that level of fear about anyone posing an alternative view about anything else. But when it came to restriction of civil liberties, you were demonised and ostracised and potentially rendered unemployed if you had an alternative view. And that, I think, is a concerning lesson for people, how easy that was.
And Chris, there's been a lot of concerns that particularly from the few of us who are particularly interested in civil liberties, it does feel like if a bomb went off here, God forbid today, the movement would never recover. But on that question, Chris, was the nanny state emboldened by this period? Because that was the kind of concern of a lot of people on our side of the argument, which is this has completely, it turned Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance into almost celebrities as a consequence.
Knights of the realm, certainly. All these people have been given honours.
Do you think that so far that the kind of nanny state has got a shot in the arm?
I think it's still a bit too early to tell, despite the fact that Sunak has announced the prohibition of tobacco. It's probably still too early. Certainly, we can conclude that the bounce back in freedom that I was hoping for, that might be sort of like a countervailing effect to people being locked up and go, well, now we're going to make up for it.
Yeah.
We're going to party hard. No, I mean, the most notorious statistic sticks in my mind during lockdown is the 25% of people who supposedly wanted casinos and nightclubs closed forever.
Oh, yeah, and a curfew. They want a curfew as well.
Yeah, forever. Yeah. 10 p.m.
Nightclub.
I don't know. Probably. You would think so, wouldn't you? We've done so much in the name of public health that everything else seems, I suppose, moderate by comparison. So, no, it's not been good, has it?
But let's move on to the final topic we want to talk about before we go out for the questions, which is the debanking scandal. So, Patrick, another one of your colleagues, significant politician turned broadcaster, Nigel Farage, of course, has been at the centre of this whole debanking scandal, given the fact that he was kicked out of his personal account and his business account at Coutts. It was kind of reflexively dismissed by the great and good as him just wailing about nothing because he didn't have enough money in his account and he's trying to launch a culture war off it, et cetera, et cetera.
Fast forward to today, the CEO of NatWest Group is gone. The CEO of Coutts is gone because it's been revealed that they were kind of quite openly talking about getting rid of him on the account of his political views. There's been the news this week is that the kind of internal reports which had been commissioned in relation to what the bank had gotten up to has kind of been a bit of a whitewash. But where do you think we are at now? Because I know you've covered this story on your show.
Well, I think that what Nigel has done is expose something that a lot of people had assumed existed, not just in banking, but right across every single sector. And that is good. That's good that it's out there. Will it change anything in the long run? I don't think so, because it's so ingrained. Every single major corporation at the moment appears to put virtue signalling above the quality of the product that they're actually supposed to be supplying for you. So, like, if you run a bank or you want to put your money in a bank account, you expect them to manage that money correctly and for them to behave like a bank. I don't care whether or not they go out and, you know, drape themselves in a rainbow flag and go and do something. That's got nothing to do with me. They shouldn't really be getting involved with things like that. I don't really care or think that they should have a view when it comes to things like, you know, whether children should be given, you know, completely life-changing hormone treatment, all of this stuff. It's a bank. That's what the product is. That's what it's there to do. And it's showing that now in the corporate world, there is more of a priority on that kind of agenda and being seen to be on the right side of history when it comes to things like the Black Lives Matter movement, etc., than it is for just providing that basic service. And it just shows how easy it is to cancel people as well. If they thought, and the stupidity of it all, if you thought that you were going to cancel Nigel Farage's bank account and that he wasn't going to say anything about that, you were, for want of a better phrase, banking on him keeping his mouth shut, which he's never done in his life, and obviously will never do.
And he has a TV show.
And he has a platform.
It's going to come up.
And he has a platform, and he has resources, and he's been around the block a few times, and he's used to sticking it to people that he fundamentally disagrees with. So all of this was going to come out in the wash. The more concerning aspect of this for me is the little guy. It's all of us, frankly. If something like this can happen to Nigel Farage, how long has this been going on? And so how many people who might not have thought, oh, I'm going to submit subject access requests. Also, the other thing, just finally on this one, is that for most people, I think anyway, most people are probably maybe one or two paychecks away from being in serious trouble. I certainly am. If it comes to things like a mortgage or you've got car on finance or whatever you've got, most people are just a couple of paychecks away from potential oblivion. So by the time that Nigel had found out that he was having his account closed and going through the appeals process and getting to the point where he is now today where everything's fine, most people would have lost their house, their car, you know, everything else. If your relationship was already on the rocks, she might have left you as well, for goodness sake. The kids are out of private school if you're lucky enough to even send them there in the first place. Or your life would have been in absolute tatters because someone that you've never met before, or a group of people you've never met before, subscribed to an ultra-woke ideology that has got nothing to do with their job. And that is a very, very concerning thing in this country at the moment.
And Madeline, is this a good example of how people talk about the culture war as being like ephemeral? It doesn't really affect people's everyday life. Surely this is a good example of how this stuff can really affect life.
You know? Absolutely. Like this meme that it's all just like distraction from real issues, or even like culture war is, I think that term is often used to be like a kind of a silly little spat that you have in lieu of real issues. And this is such a good example. I mean, you know, as Patrick said, it's not just that had someone without the means and the influence of Nigel Farage been in that position, like it's already happened. You know, there are numerous examples of people who, there was a priest, an Anglican vicar, I think, who got debanked because he had said to his bank, I'm not happy with the amount of, like, I think they had a load of like LGBTQ messaging in there. And he was saying, you're a bank, like, you know, do banking. Why do I have to have this propaganda shoved down my throat? And I think he was told that he could not bank. It was a building society, not a bank, but it is happening. And of course, there was in Canada with the truckers and stuff like this. You know, there's tons of examples of the little guy being hit really hard. And that's why it's important. And I'm actually was somewhat heartened that in the wake of what happened with Nigel Farage, there are actually quite a lot of people who don't personally like him, but true liberals who are saying this is a real problem with profound implications for society as a whole. Obviously, there were a lot of people who were like, haha, Farage. But I would say that there were some people came out of the woodwork, which I was quite surprised by and quite pleasantly surprised that they saw that there is a much bigger general principle at stake here.
Chris, what have you made of the whole debanking scandal?
I'm against it, Tom. I'm against it. I'm never sure when we talk about these things whether we're just sort of complaining about them, always saying like they shouldn't be allowed to do this. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because I do think they should be allowed to do this, as much as I disagree with it, and that sort of, you
know, this is the kind of libertarian,
that's liberalism, isn't it? Really,
conundrum.
Yeah. And you might say, well, what if they did it to you, and every bank did it to you? They took exception to my views on, you know, Greenwich Mean Time, and so they not just cancel my existing account, but every other bank said you can't bank with us either. Well, I just don't think it would happen. I mean, at the very least, Toby Young might set up an independent bank, or I could use crypto or something like that. I just don't think it would happen, because there's always someone who's prepared to take your money. Bankers, like Patrick's quite right, the bankers, everyone hates bankers, so they've, in the last 15 years, gone out of their way to pretend that they only sort of do banking as a sideline to their civil rights and climate change work. Yeah. You know? And you go, every airport in the world has all these stupid HSB. It's very vague. You don't really know what they're trying to say, but it's clear that they are. It's nothing about, like, banking or interest rates or anything like that, is it? It's just about peace and humanity and mankind, you know, we're all one and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, they've gone out of their way to pretend that they don't actually do banking or try and make a profit. The only interest every business should have is making a profit. But I do think they have the right to debank people, I think, if that's what they want to do. And it's up to us then, as people who protest about this, to cancel our accounts with NatWest.
Do you think the fact that they are getting a lot of guarantee from the taxpayer and from the state, does that not change the kind of the social contract a bit? Like, we're forced to pay for this.
Yeah, I suppose NatWest is 40% owned by the state still.
And I believe in Farage's case, at least the claim was that he found it impossible to bank with almost anyone as a consequence of the kind of mix of the desire not to have an account with him combined with the extra regulations that his status would incur. So, you know, even if it's not every single one, surely
are you saying that the government should force these, banks should not be allowed to debank anyone?
See, I'm not actually a libertarian, so there's all sorts of things I'd be very comfortable with these companies not being able to do. It's a bit like the big tech conversation.
You're a Marxist libertarian.
Well, no, there's emphasis on the former rather than the latter. No, the point is, I find it interesting, more so when you have left-wingers and liberals saying, well, it's a free market. They can do whatever they want. And obviously that will happen in relation to the banking question, it'll happen in relation to big tech. First of all, that's a really odd point to be made from people who otherwise would have obviously all kinds of problems with private companies doing what they want. But there's all kinds of things we don't let private companies do for good reason, one of which is discriminate against people on certain bases.
No, actually, I think companies should be able to discriminate against people.
There we go.
What do you think of the so-called no-fault eviction thing? Because that, to me, is a similar thing. Like, I'm not in favour of landlords kicking people out for no reason. I don't see why they would do it, to be honest, because it's a big faff getting a new person in. If there's no fault there, why would you do it? But if they want to do it, then it's their property. I don't see what the problem is. I don't understand why the Tories... It's just another, you know, left-wing thing the Tories are doing.
Yeah.
For probably a problem that doesn't really exist.
It's displacement activity rather than get to the bottom of why we have a housing crisis.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there not a bit of a difference there? In terms of, so banks and big corporations sign up to something B Corp, I think, isn't it? Which is an overarching set of values and so-called morality that they then say that if their customers don't adhere to, then they can't be their customers. And I would argue that that puts that creep of those values through society. So if I tweet something I really think about this major news event, will my bank see this? And then will they cancel my account? That is a good way of silencing you. We already have the kind of, you know, the kind of dinner party talk where people feel as though they can't say anything. I mean, I get approached by people quite often who work in the arts, for example, who are kind of pretty centre-right, wishy-washy Tories, who feel like they can't open their mouths when they're at work. And so I would argue with the difference maybe between the things like no-fault evictions and the banking side of things is, I think the banking side of things forces an ideology onto people that silences people from their real views, whereas a no-fault eviction is just maybe a landlord making a decision to just boot someone out.
What about the gay wedding cake people?
The gay wedding cake people. Yeah. So they had a right to refute. But I just thought that was stupid.
Well, yeah, I agree. It was stupid.
Yeah, it is.
But also, it's a different case insofar as it's asking the business in question, in this case, people who make cakes, to express an opinion. They were basically being kind of compelled to express an opinion.
There was also another cake shop down the road that didn't adhere to a hardcore set of Christian values, whereas unfortunately, there are now loads of companies that adhere to that umbrella B Corp way of looking at things. So I would argue it's a bit more...
I mean, more than anything else in this discussion, I'm just struck by this idea that all these banks have values.
Yeah.
You know, we are...
The values at the Carphone Warehouse.
It was like, was it Halifax when they brought in their kind of pronoun badges and then people were angry about it, and then they said, well, you can take your business elsewhere. He thought, what the hell?
This is the answer. We take our business elsewhere. And that's why I don't think you'd end up with every bank doing it, because people will take their business elsewhere. A lot of the time, that just means taking your debt elsewhere, to be fair, when it comes to banking, which is not that scary, I guess, but you know, that's their business.
On that very practical note, let's go out for some questions.
Postbag.
It's bulging, isn't it?
So, any questions, points? I think we've got some microphones. As well there. So, just this gentleman in the middle here, and then we'll come back. I'm going to take a few at a time and then bring it back. Yes,
On smoking. Mm. I haven't touched a ciggy in years, but I have the occasional cigar as an act of protest and rebellion. And I couldn't help noticing, you know, here we are in Church House. I went outside for a breath of fresh air. There's a sign saying no smoking outside. I'm on the platform at the station. Oh, you're not allowed to vape anywhere on the platform. The platform's about a mile long. This is my point or my question. You know, should we be walking around ringing a bell? You know, shouting unclean.
I like the robots. Another one. There's a gentleman at the back there, I believe.
Yes, hi. First of all, I'm a bit worried about Big Brother because he seems to be watching you on the wall. It's Joe Biden, isn't it? very quickly on the point of banking, I'd like to make the point that what happened was against the law, because banks operate under a highly regulated environment. Cake shops don't. And what they did was against the rules. So if you consider that moving to a cashless society, you have to have a bank account. So I think there is a big difference. The other thing I wanted to say was regarding politicians now hiding. They don't lead, they don't make decisions, hence why they hide behind experts who are put out to have daily conversations with the press. It's why they hide behind supranational organisations like WHO. And I think that's a serious problem. Why Sweden managed not to do that is interesting, because they were obviously very brave and took a lot of flack, but that's what needs to happen, I think.
Thank you. Any more before we come back? Just there in the back corner.
Two quick questions. Firstly, does anyone on the panel own a dangerous dog? just because I've never cheered the nanny state on more than when they ban those fucking monsters on the end of leaves. But I see seemingly walking the street with complete abandon in East London at the moment. And then secondly, a more serious question about the police. And we talked about enforcing the law. I found myself coming from, I'm afraid I am a lawyer, coming from a perspective of having to sometimes criticise the police, but circumstances forcing me to becoming increasingly pro-police in almost every argument I make, or perhaps more accurately, more anti-police. Because so much scepticism of the police, so much distrust in the police that's arisen possibly from lockdown and the role that they took in the management of our lives. I feel very nervous when people blame individual officers, because I think they're doing an incredibly difficult job. And then we also live at a time when a story which has perhaps gone under the radar a little bit, perhaps for good reason, because they probably can't report on it, but the first time a firearms officer has been charged with murder in this country, which seems an extraordinarily dangerous precedent. But on the police more generally, what do the panel think?
Thank you. So, Patrick, don't feel like you've got to answer absolutely everything, right. But should we go around ringing a bell? What about Sweden, bully XLs and the police? Anything in there that you want to respond to?
Police. Right, so I often find myself in a little bit of a tricky situation when I'm reporting on something or giving a view on something, because I do think sometimes individual police officers cock up. Right. And you're often presented with camera phone footage of them doing something silly. And therefore that can make, you know, quite a good telly, like them littering or something. Right. I think that the police cop it, for want of a better phrase, far too much in this country. They have got an incredibly difficult job. You are spot on that. I think that, you know, stop and search type of things and And them just trying to go about their jobs and enforce the law are now made infinitely more complicated by a group of people who assume that they're always racist and would say that things like they want to defund the police. Well, what does that mean? What do we end up with? I mean, I'm sorry, but I think, you know, I'm all for civil liberties and everything, but I also do think there are a few people in this country who probably do need to be, you know, have laws ruling their lives, right? Because otherwise I do think it would be chaos. I think the police have an incredibly difficult job. The firearms officer thing, I think, is a much more concerning thing for society than people initially thought of. You saw however many firearms officers putting down their guns when that individual was charged with murder. If we end up with counter-terror officers, people going to arrest the most dangerous people in society, and they are the kind of people who want to blow us up or who wouldn't think twice about shooting if they were cornered or whatever. If those people have to have a second thought in their head at the moment when it comes for them to pull the trigger, I've got a massive problem with that, because I think people will die as a result, and they should be backed up by their bosses a lot more. But it is that tightrope, isn't it, between going, I disagree with that police officer doing the Macarena at a gay pride event when maybe they should be solving a stabbing, and at the same time thinking, well, you know, police officers need to be given the support to do their jobs, I think.
Definitely. Chris, anything you want to come back on? Maybe the Bully XL's question?
Yeah, this podcast is officially anti-Bully XL. We've been saying it's the exception to our libertarianism and our Marxism. No, don't just ban them, kill them all. As far as I'm concerned, round them up and gas them. or shoot them. I mean, there's plenty of options. Cigars. Yeah, the cigars are going to be.
It's not the dog, it's the owner.
It's the owner.
That's what I was talking about.
I feel like this is a libertarian podcast. It comes up a little bit else. Yeah.
Cigars at the moment are included in the Sunak progressive ban, as are brilliantly Rizzlers. they're gonna ban people from buying cigarette papers. So maybe the pot smoking community might have something to say about that. I don't know.
Very vigorous group of people. Yeah. Organised.
And the police.
well, on that,
cannabis users have had more libertarian success than anybody else in the last 20 years, haven't they?
But it almost hasn't been libertarian success, has it? They're just therapeutic. Have you seen any responses from some of the kind of drug reform people?
No, it's been pathetic. In fact, Transform, which is the most radical of the drug legalisation organisations, which literally wants to legalise everything, including heroin, albeit in a highly regulated form, but still legal if you want to get it, they put out a very weasel-wordy a bit of sophistry, really, defending the ban. I knew they would do, because these people aren't actually libertarians. They just like taking drugs, as far as I can see. police, you know, society, there's a lot of ruin in the nation. Society can withstand a lot of stupid wokery and all the trivial obsessions of the political class. You know, universities can withstand it reasonably well. Society will fall down once those kind of idiotic values are applied to the police and the army. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole health and safety culture and so on obviously is not appropriate with the police and the army. The army have already recently dropped their standards, you know, what you have to do to train up to join the infantry, because they want women to join, and not many are, but enough are joining, that they've had to lower the standards. It's been years since they got rid of the height regulation for coppers. You know, these things are there for a reason, right? There's a reason you have to run with a 20-pound pack for several miles if you want to fight in a war. And there's a reason, you know, it's better to have big, tall coppers than, you know, 5.5-foot tall coppers. So this stuff is already starting to eat away at the police and the army. And I think that is extremely concerning.
Madeline, anything you want to come back on?
Sure. So quickly on the police, I think one underexplored problem that we face is that there is this kind of really pernicious, like, America brain in our culture right now, where especially young people, I think, do genuinely believe that we have exactly the same racial dynamics, the same race relations as we do in America. I was really struck during the George Floyd protest in London a few years ago when there were young people who were saying things like, hands up, don't shoot, or stop, don't shoot, even though we have unarmed police officers. They don't carry guns. Like, hardly any of them have guns. And it would be absolutely insane if we would let the, you know, a very, very different culture of policing influence our debate in a genuine way, rather than just being, you know, a few slogans. I think the gentleman's point there about smoking, yes, I think it's pretty remarkable, the slippery slope in action since the smoking ban came in. You know, this was supposed to be indoor spaces. And now I feel that logic has basically transformed into, well, we've colonized indoors. Now we want outdoors as well, even though it's outside. But the same rules should apply. And I've noticed that, I mean, I've quit smoking recently, and I feel like a bit of a traitor because it's like giving into the public health big man that wants me to stop smoking. But it was entirely because I'm 31 and all my friends are getting Botox. nothing to do with public health at all. But I have quit, and now I vape. And I noticed the last few years, because I was basically a pretty keen smoker from about 15 onwards, there has just been more like social disapproval in spaces. You know, people kind of cough pointedly at you, or they'll say there are children nearby and the children are like 100 yards away, but you still have to look out for them. And I think there has just been a bit more of this kind of general like social intolerance, rather than that old idea that like, I don't necessarily approve of everything that everyone around me, everything that they do, but I'm not going to go and be a jerk to them. But I think people now feel entitled with smokers, as far as they're concerned, that these are like gutter people who don't deserve any of that tolerance.
This is not the government doing it. You know, there's no legal outdoor smoking. But I challenged the guy outside. Tom went out for a cigarette. I was going to have a vape. Well, I was having a vape. And he said, there's no smoking, so I'm not smoking, vaping. He said, we can't do that either. I said, well, we're outdoors in like, you know, a very large outdoor quadrant. And he said, yeah, but it's a school. Well, I said, well, firstly, it's Saturday. Secondly, the school's 100 yards away at the other side of this quadrant. I mean, what kind of stupid excuse is that? It's just the Jobsworth mentality. You know, public health mentality combined with the English Jobsworth mentality of actually obeying the law, and in fact gold plating law, is a recipe for disaster.
I'm really sorry to butt in, but there's one thing we haven't really talked about that much, and I think it feeds into lockdown, it feeds into everything. It's just the attitude towards the NHS. You know, if you're going to treat the health service like an idol from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, then like, don't be surprised if people have to start kind of moderating their lives in a really drastic way, because nothing is ever enough in the way of sacrifice to the NHS.
Yeah, that was Sunak's whole point of the speech, wasn't it? Like, we cannot withstand all this demand from smokers.
Yeah, there was a sign in, I think, a village where they have brought in their own like 20 mile an hour speed limit or something. Yes. It was like, reduce your speed for the NHS. Yeah.
Not for the children.
Sorry, not for yourself.
Our NHS.
It's very explicit now. Both parties seem to be talking euphemistically about preventative medicine, which obviously sounds lovely and making sure people are healthy and whatever, but it is almost explicitly in the conversation of the health service is screwed, so what we need to do is make sure you fuckers get healthier. Yeah. Rather than actually it being there to look after you when you need it to be. And it does feel like, as you say, a kind of sequel to protect the NHS, as it were. You know, that's the main object here. It's not about saving lives or whatever. Is this something you've kind of picked up, Patrick?
Yeah, definitely. This idea that I wonder how long it is before, you know, when you go to the checkout, and it will obviously all be self-checkout because, you know, there'll be no human beings working in supermarkets anymore. And then you go there and you tap it and you go, no, your shop now has too many calories in it. You can't possibly buy this thing. You have to choose. And then you go, right, okay, fine. And you go, oh, no, you've got three bottles of wine there. I know this is your weekly shop, but you know now that you're only allowed 1.5 bottles of wine a week. You know, this is terrible. You're setting alarm bells off. And it is this slow creep. And I know all this stuff sounds laughable, but actually, how far away is that kind of thing? You know, we've allowed this slow creep of things into society. I mean, you can't advertise cheese on the London Underground anymore because it's seen as being too unhealthy, right? It's a junk food advert.
That is a disgrace. I thought you were
a disgrace. Yeah, I've been to China to visit pork farms. But seriously, it is a disgrace. I'll say it. It is. I've suddenly got very exercised about this. You've taken my stinking bishop away from me, and I'm pissed off. But it's ludicrous. You've got this idea you can have, and by the way, you know, I don't want to offend anyone in this room or anything, but the idea that you could have an advert for a quote-unquote fashion model who is one of the unhealthiest people that you'll ever see in your life, but you can't advertise fucking Wensleydale. Right. We've just gone mental.
Either.
Yeah, all you know, show... This
beach
is the
body thing.
Thing.
You can show that.
Right, we can't show you, we can't really show you what one, health looks like, right? We can't show you a healthy person, but we can't show you an unhealthy thing either.
That was a Sadiq London only policy, but I think Labour want to now draw it out nationally should they get in charge. So this is going to be the reality for everyone. It's completely insane.
And that policy's gone nuts, isn't it, Chris? Aren't they now tearing down posters for theatre productions because they had wedding cake on it or something?
Yeah, that was one earlier this year.
I believe
if I were a younger man, I'd emigrate. James can't answer.
No more fake snails.
But haven't you? You did a bit of an investigation into this, and you saw some of the kind of internal emails or discussions that were going on in TfL.
Yeah, the TfL had to spend tens of thousands of pounds modifying their own adverts because they showed they had maps of different areas, and it would show, for example, people eating strawberries and cream at Wimbledon. Well, you can't show that anymore. People eating having a curry on Brick Lane, can't show that. Censor their own maps. It's unbelievable.
So, now let's go out for some more questions. So let's see some hands. Anyone want to ask a question? Yep, over here.
Thank you for reminding me of the snitch helpline in COVID. And that was deeply depressing. But I am getting a bit more optimistic about those hideous trainings that employers give their employees on unconscious bias, but also about climate change. And the reason why I'm getting a bit more optimistic is people are kicking back, given it, why are you telling me what to think? This is my private thoughts. But then again, I think to myself, actually, it should be people pushing back even more because it's happening everywhere. You know, I'm lucky to work at Spite because otherwise I would be getting it. So I wondered what you thought about all of this kind of training in the kind of the workforce and all of that kind of thing.
That's our diversity officer there. That's fine. She'll be there at the end if you have any complaints. Any more questions? Any at all? Yeah, down front.
Thank you. And I think to go one further from cheese, I think someone from advertising said, one of my friends said she couldn't put an advert for buttered toast on the London Underground as well. So I don't know which is worse. But is there anything, I guess, from a joint collectivism that you think is required? Maybe it's the NHS, or maybe it's a war effort, maybe it's addressing climate change that does conflict with your, your libertarian values.
Any more before we come back? Some big questions? Yeah, right at the back there.
Hello. I don't know if you've been following the beer party in Vienna, which is doing quite well at the moment and promises a big beer fountain and a trade-in scheme for all pre-mixed shandies. The broader point I want to make is that when pushing back against a lot of things that seem pretty absurd, is the only way to do that really satire anymore, because you're not winning the argument.
Yeah. Very good point. Right, so, Chris, anything in particular that you want to come back on there, apart from maybe wanting to set up the Beer Party UK branch? Or
yeah, this is a party you can vote for, is it, in Vienna?
It is,
awesome.
I think 15%.
Really? Oh. The Beer Party? This sounds like Farage's potential next venture, isn't it? He's looking for a new party.
Why has he been wasting his time with Brexit?
Satire and so, yeah, well, I try and satirise it. It's beyond satire, obviously, a lot of it when they're banning cheese adverts on the tube. I really think, particularly with smoking, the only way people are going to come to their senses is going to be like alcohol in America in the 20s. I mean, they're turning it into a black market product. Well, we know how that ends. I'm rooting for the smugglers, to be perfectly honest with you. I just think, I don't understand why anyone buys cigarettes in this country. Legally, I mean. Because I've just been to Georgia, not Atlanta, the Tbilisi, Georgia, and cigarettes are less than £2 a pack there. I was in Istanbul airport. I thought I'd bring some Golden Virginia back for somebody. And it was €43 for 5 50-gram pouches, right? And I was thinking, that doesn't seem that good a deal. That's like £8 a pouch. I'm not sure I should buy this. So I Googled what the price was in London, in Britain. Do you know what it is? You probably do. You smoke it. £35 per pouch. I was buying £160 worth of tobacco for £40, right? The prohibition is almost going to be a sideline. It's almost going to be irrelevant compared to the price pushing people onto the black market. It's going to happen anyway. At some point, surely, when you have so much criminality associated with this, and there's actually more kids smoking because they find it easy to get hold of, because in effect it's much, much cheaper now, maybe people will finally come to their senses and realise that they're not philosopher kings, and you have to tolerate a certain amount of bad behaviour in a society if you want it to function.
Madeline, anything you want to come back
sure.
on there?
The gentleman there had a good question about, are there things that would counteract our kind of pure libertarianism? Yes, absolutely. So, for example, with the question of global warming, I think that the best way that you deal with that is by, for example, bringing in taxes that would offset the use of carbon, so the big emitters have to pay at the source. That seems to me much fairer than forcing everyone in society, including disproportionately the poorest, that they all have to stop driving their car or pay a fortune that they don't have to get a heat pump, which doesn't even work properly. So I think there are ways of reacting to it that don't involve kind of immiserating everybody, and especially the poorest people. The lady there had a question about, is there room for optimism about the trainings and stuff that goes on? Well, I feel pretty much like we're doomed on this front, because I work at The Telegraph, which is a right-leaning newspaper. One of the conquest laws of politics is that any organisation that is not explicitly right-wing will sooner or later become left-wing. Well, The Telegraph is explicitly right-wing, and we have so much of this, like, diversity stuff, and there's like, a lot of pronouns. We even have a special, like, bookshelf where people leave really woke books around that you can just take them to learn. You can get a Naomi Klein or something. So I kind of think if that's happening at The Telegraph, then we are kind of fucked.
Which in the IA are really the only islands of liberty.
Return
right.
To the Tufton Street Nexus. Yeah. And fine. Patrick, anything you want to respond to?
We are yet to be troubled by that kind of behaviour at GB.
The only places I've ever been that has gender neutral toilets.
But can I push back on that slightly? That's a space thing, right? Because this has got nothing to do with ideology. It's like, right, we've got a whopping great big studio, a bit of an office, and too many people. And we're like, can everyone just piss together then, please? everyone's gone, yeah, all right, but then occasionally you'll get someone, people go, your toilets are gender neutral. It's like, right, well, is that or the fucking hallway? So it's whatever, do whatever you want, you know, it's up to you. There's no morality here. But, coming back to your point about what you said about that stuff. It makes me want to push back on it even more. If somebody said to me, you have to inherently acknowledge your white privilege or things like that. I mean, I come, which will come as a no shock to most people, from a very long line of peasants. And one on the Irish side, one on the Greek Cypriot farming side. All right, I think you could go back as far as, we've never enslaved anybody, never done anything to anybody. We immigrated over here. They worked very hard. My Irish family came over here at a time when Irish people weren't allowed in boarding houses. We've not really bothered anyone, right, throughout the course of our lives. So trying to tell me I've had some kind of white privilege or whether it's, my unconscious bias and all of this stuff, it would make me go the other way. And I would hope that it would actually, at some point, people will realise it's doing much more to divide us than it is to bring us together. Whether or not that's ever going to happen, I don't know, but that would be my view on it.
There's definitely been some studies which seem to suggest the diversity things, these kind of, particularly the kind of racial diversity stuff, has no impact whatsoever apart from to make people more hostile to working class people, yeah. Which is like something which makes a lot of sense when you think about it. I'm going to come out to the audience for just a final time for any kind of last questions before we bring it back. But when we wrap up, I'm also going to ask our two guests to give us, if they had to have one band, what would it be? This is a kind of new feature on our podcast where, because we're quite libertarian and because we're anti-ban in almost all circumstances, we like to invite our guests, if you were kind of dictator for the day, what would you pick? The only two rules: it can't be really dark and weird, and the other one is that it also can't be really worthy. You can't ban poverty or liberalism or anything like that. So if there are any more questions, please do ask them. But also, if you've got a ban, just let us know, and then we'll get that into. Yes, there's a lady just run down the front here.
Thank you. I'm a psychologist and I've worked for many years in banking. So everything you said, Patrick, is absolutely true. It wasn't a surprise to me about Nigel Farage, and I think it will get worse. And to Madeline's point about the Canadian truckers as well, it's quite frightening what can happen. But from a psychology perspective, and you mentioned David Halpern as well, how much do you think governments and other nefarious groups, such as some of the climate groups, are using psychological tactics and sort of cult-like tactics as well to cultivate and get people on side?
Thank you very much. And there was another one down the back here. Where was that hand gone?
Yeah, I suspect in terms of some of the excesses of what you were hinting at in terms of the work agenda, you mentioned the Jobsworths part of British culture. There's also common sense and maybe that passive withdrawal. So in the corporation I work, which I won't name, there was a column which they were adding where there was sort of fill your pronouns, and after a couple of iterations of no one really filling the pronouns, that was quietly dropped. So I do hope that in some of these instances, I think there was another one in terms of interviews as well, where there had to be a diverse panel in terms of ethnicity and whatever that came from the US. And again, we were struggling to get the panels and get the right candidates. So again, that was modified. So there is a little bit of hope, but I do sense a frustration there as well. So yeah.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. Just oh, please.
Yeah. Sorry, just wanted to speak about the financial services. And there's really a huge push towards ESG, so the environmental, social and governance kind of targets. Every major corporation has got this, and to be honest, I think it's a bit wank. it's not really regulated, so it's not really clearly defined. Anyone can make this stuff up just to meet these targets, and I think it's completely ridiculous. And every training we have, to go back to that, has this underlying message, and it's really irritating. Mm-hmm. And banning... Can we put Carol Vorderman on the list, please?
Oh. Carol Vorderman. Seems like a popular one in the room. Yes.
Oh, hi. A friend of mine who works out of WeWorks. WeWorks is a nice place to work because there's a free bar from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock every day, Monday to Friday. He's just set up a very small, bespoke, anti-ethical investment fund.
I'm not sure if I like where this is going.
He invests in coal.
Guns and...
tobacco has done remarkably well over the last 12 months. He returned about 136%. Over the last 12 months. Good. Obviously, the war helps, but...
Yeah.
Any more before we come back? So, Chris, anything that you want to respond to there?
Yeah, I bought a lot of unethical shares during the pandemic when the stock market tanked. I got tobacco and alcohol and lots of oil, and they all did very well. WeWork didn't do very well. Hasn't done. I don't know if you've seen the share price of WeWork recently, like 1p, I think. Psychology, I don't know if it's even psychology. I mean, this lie to you, really. You can't even call it psychology. This flat-out lie. All these, so many policies. The TFL ban, a study came out going, it's cut obesity by an implausibly large amount. It was just basically a lie. Minimum pricing has failed in Scotland. They just lied about it. They just lied, they always lie to your face. So it's not like subtle dark arts of nudging or anything. It's just people just don't care about the truth and they will defend. They lie about the problem, they lie about...
Hopefully.
Well, they tried, didn't they? But it's still fairly crude psychology, just making people fearful. And to be honest with you, I'm quite a fan of those old adverts that scared you off things from the 70s where they really used fear and people flying kites into pylons and this running down a beach with this big bit of glass coming out and you just know it's gonna, that kind of stuff, the old school anti-smoking adverts, I thought were quite good. I don't mind all that kind of stuff. I think it's fairly quite in your face, actually. I think it's fairly honest. It's just like
Madeline, let's have you both do your bans at the very end, but anything just in terms of the points that have been raised there you might want
really
to come
I think
to.
Everything has been covered. I mean, I haven't got anything to add to what Chris was saying, really.
Well, unless Patrick has, let's get straight to the bans. I know you'll have been thinking about this, Patrick. Please, if you had to have one ban, and it's got to be the most petty.
I always do incredibly badly with these things. The questions are too big.
Mine, for example, is wheelie suitcases.
Mm-hmm. You'd ban wheelie suitcases? Yeah. Do they make you wheelie angry?
Because they slow me... I would ban anything that slows me down in London. I would ban rucksacks, actually. People who wear rucksacks never seem to realise they've got one on.
Okay, all right.
You're trying to get behind them. So excuse me. People on the tubes, anything to do with luggage in London.
See, I feel a bit mean doing this, but part of me wants to ban Americans on the tube. Because they're
saying, I've got written down here Americans on TFL.
No, because how do I get to Leicester Square? You don't, mate. You don't. I heard one called Loughborough Luga Baruga once. And I thought, how did you get here? You know. So that.
Madeline, did you have a backup?
Yes, I did. So quickly on the point about Americans. I obviously love Americans. But I will say that I used to live in Stratford, East London, and I did once hear a couple of Americans talking about Anne Hathaway's cottage and Shakespeare, and I was a bit worried for them. So what I would ban... the other thing I would ban is... It's kind of silly, but I'm really sick of the like glut of twee stuff that's in advertising today. Like they try to sell you something that's aimed at an adult. It'll be like a mortgage or something, and it will be like they've got some fucking giraffe trying to sell it to you. It's like I don't need a giraffe. I'm sick of the infantilized. It's often with things like banking. I don't know if they think like a cartoon animal would help you feel more secure, but it really doesn't do the opposite. It just raises my blood pressure.
And on that authoritarian note, join me in thanking our speakers. Thanks so much, everyone. Enjoy the rest of the day. You've been listening to Last Orders. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Please do take a moment to leave us a rating and a review. And if you'd like to support the show, why not become a Spiked supporter? Just go to spiked-online.com/supporters to sign up. That's spiked-online.com/supporters.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.